Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duvernay are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, FM 96.9, and streaming at 1290kzsb.com. We're repeated at 11 and Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets and in Montecito's Upper Village. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How you doing? Are you staying cool out there?
Well, first of all, I am really feeling that I've been misled. I was told it never varies from 72 degrees, and it's been 90 degrees here, and it's not what I count.
You were transported to the East Coast. You're now in Florida.
I know.
With our guests today.
Our guests are from Florida. I'm sorry, we actually went on the air a few seconds late, so I don't quite see my guests yet, but I'm sure they'll click on a video so we can see them. But in the meantime, let's begin, as we always do, going through some of the interesting articles of the last couple of days. And the first one is in a newspaper usually we don't talk about on the show. Washington Post yesterday afternoon had an article entitled, Americans are finally feeling better about the economy. Consumer sentiment, which hit rock bottom in June, has now begun itching up. Decades of high inflation appear to be easing. And at the same time, Americans are making small changes, buying meat in bulk, for example, and shifting their shopping to non-brand items. In fact, the University of Michigan, which is a closely watched consumer survey, while it's low, has had a dramatic improvement in the last 6 weeks. And part of that is because of gas prices, which have gone from $5 a gallon to $3.74 a gallon. And gas prices tend to have a major impact on people's emotions, whether they're feeling good or bad about the economy. So this is a bit of good news. And hopefully it will continue, although the article does end by saying it's very complex and it's not clear, given the war in Ukraine and given the view that the Fed has, whether or not this will continue.
It's true. And rent prices have really gone through the roof, too. So if you're looking at, you know, inflation number, that inflation number of 8.5%, that was August's inflation number, of that 32% of it is made up on shelter. And so if you're a renter and you're having big rent increases, that definitely contributes to feeling the pinches of inflation or the effects.
Now, I think you'll like this next article from today's Wall Street Journal. It says, cut caffeine and save some money. If you want to spend less on your next shopping trip, skip the coffee. And you know, I guess professors have a lot of time on their hands, but university decided to take an experiment to, and by the way, the professor is from the University of South Florida in Tampa. This is, I guess, what they're working on in Tampa, is they tested consumers who would shop with a cup of coffee and those that didn't have a cup of caffeinated coffee. And they found that customers who drank coffee tended to buy 1.5 times more than the non-caffeinated drinkers. They also found that people who drank coffee, 74% of them purchased items that were classified as high hedonistic compared to 40.8% of those that did not drink coffee. So at least based on the University of South Florida, make sure that you don't drink coffee before you go shopping.
I thought the article was going to be at the skyrocketing prices of coffee. A cup of coffee at Starbucks went from like $2 to like $4.50.
Yeah, that's true. By the way, we came on the air late, so we didn't get a chance to introduce our guests. Maybe we should do that before we finish the articles.
Perfect. Well, we are thrilled to have with us today Stuart Grossman, who's the senior partner at Grossman, Roth, Yaffa, and Cohen.
And Stuart, why don't you introduce your surprise guest?
Well, thank you very much. And it's my pleasure to introduce Judge John Colby. Jonathan was a noted judge in Miami-Dade County for many years before he retired. And I'm at his home, excuse me, in La Jolla today. Judge Colby just was the co-judge, along with Judge Michael Hansman, on the Champlain Towers building collapse that we'll be discussing. And it was Judge Colby's charge to assist Hansman in terms of awarding the actual dollars from the $1 billion-plus settlement. And that's what he did voluntarily. He came back to Miami at Judge Hansman's request and served and listened to about 80-plus families make a plea through their attorneys for compensation. And he's back home now, catching his breath.
Well, you know, there was an article in the New York Times last week about the case, and it talked about Judge Colby. And one of the quotes that Judge Colby gave is that he called the process that they engaged in personalized justice. And we'll talk about that during the show, but I like that phrase, personalized justice, because sometimes people look at the process of plaintiffs' lawsuits without really considering what really is taking place if there are good attorneys and good cases, which is finally justice for those that really need it the most. So getting back to our articles, this one I think is quite amazing. And it begins with a story in Cleveland. This is from the New York Times. And Cleveland 4 years ago, 5 years ago, had a massive foreclosure problem. And a company came along called Optima, which decided that they were going to solve Cleveland's problems. And they came in, and within 3 years, they became the largest commercial owner in Cleveland. And it seemed that this was a solution that was fantastic. They invited these Optima people in. Well, it turns out that it was too good to be true, that Ukrainian oligarchs had been using this company, Optima, to launder money of hundreds of millions of stolen dollars. The FBI raided Optima's office, and there are now sanctions against those that were buying these companies, buying these buildings. Cleveland has now become the poster child for the need for more transparency in the real estate industry. And there's a new legislation that's been proposed, anti-money laundering, that will try to wipe away some of the opaqueness of real estate, which in many cases is purchased in hard-to-unveil corporate entities. And what makes this particular legislation unique, it's called the Enablers Act, which is going to target not simply the perpetrators, but also anyone that is enabling the purchasers to do this, which would include, I guess, the people in Cleveland. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting article. The last article I have is that Fed is now about to release what's called FedNow, FEDNOW. And what FedNow is, it's direct competition for Bitcoin. What the Fed is about to do is to institute a new system that will enable U.S. payments to be made in seconds. And what the Fed has done, and you know what I think is really amazing about this, if it's all true, and I have no reason to believe it's not true, is that it really gets rid of any value of Bitcoin. That is, if you can transact instantaneous transactions digitally with the federal government behind it, there's really no reason for Bitcoin, which has all of the problems of transparency and the lack of regulation. So,
unless you're in the mafia and you're hoping to go untraced, right?
Exactly. So,
which is, you know, how it all came about to begin with.
Yeah, this could be a major disruption for the Bitcoin industry, which in itself is a major disruption for the economy. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 and FM 96.9, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner.
And we can be reached at 805-564-1290, or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. If you're just joining us, we have a real treat today with us on air. We have Judge John Colby, as well as plaintiff's attorney Stuart Grossman, both part of the Surfside Condo case. And if anyone's been following it, it's really been a fascinating look into the justice system of how things should be going in these types of tragic cases. So thank you both for being here with us today.
Most welcome.
So Stuart, let's start with you. You are also a resident of Montecito here in Santa Barbara. And so what brought you originally to Santa Barbara?
I had the pleasure of coming out for business to see a well-known cardiologist named Bill Alton, who was with the Santa Barbara Cardiology Group. And I stayed at the San Ysidro Ranch and just fell in love with the area. And a short time after, bought some land up on Park Lane, sold it, and then later bought a house in Sea Meadow, and now have a house in another part of town called Ennisbrook. So that's where I live.
Excellent. So I can't help but to think, you know, we have two people playing a role in the justice system in South Florida, and you're both now residing in California. What are the odds of that?
Well, John's here full time. Let him explain. He's in La Jolla.
That is a good question. So, John, you are an 11th Circuit judge in San Diego County. How did you get pulled into this Southern, you know, Florida case?
Well, actually, I'm a judge in the 11th Circuit in Miami, and I retired from there and decided that I wanted to move, for the most part, full time out of Miami to La Jolla and Southern California, which I've loved ever since I went to University of California, San Diego for undergraduate. So I was
that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I wanted to come back to a place that had so much nature and had mountains and hills and deserts and snow not far away. And it was completely a different lifestyle than Miami, although both are great.
So can you both share with us What makes this Surfside condo so unique in the justice system from each of your perspectives, from the judicial side as well as the attorney side?
Why don't you go ahead, Judge?
I think from the judicial perspective, I found it to be the most fascinating case of my life and my career for many reasons. One was the magnitude of the tragedy, that it was internationally received with such empathy around the world. And for me to be honored to be able to play a small part in not only meeting the families who survived these tragic deaths, but to also be in the courtroom in my old courthouse with the top lawyers in the practice of law, for me to be a witness to this legal history will forever change me. The feeling that I got in meeting each of the families and hearing the stories of the poor folks who met their deaths that night will change my soul forever. I've never seen such humanity. I've never seen so much emphasis on the importance of families, of becoming stronger in light of the most tragic circumstances. It was an amazing thing to witness. And I feel bad that the hearings, the trials were in private because of the importance of confidentiality of medical discussions and private matters, because I think if it had been televised for the world to see, the image of the justice system would be forever changed.
So explain to us how that worked. So the presiding judge, was that Judge Michael Hansen?
Yes.
And so he then brought in how many other judicial officers like yourself to assist? And was it like a bench hearing where there were several judges making, you know, discussing and making decisions, or how did that work?
Well, actually, from the way Judge Hansman explains it, is that his background is mostly in very complex business matters. That's what his practice had been, and that's his division in the court, dealing with contracts and very enormous tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in business disputes. And he originally asked me to come back to assist because in my practice, and while I was on the bench, I handled cases much like these cases, although obviously not as big in magnitude. And he thought that I would be able to assist him in evaluating these claims and the values that should be fairly placed upon them. So it was just he and I that would sit at the bench and decide these matters.
And one of the interesting parts of this New York Times article is the fact that Judge Hansman was able to get the best of the best plaintiff's lawyers. And Stuart Grossman is probably the number one plaintiff's attorney in the country. And the fact that you had such quality plaintiff's attorneys, I think, is part of the reason it was so successful, despite the great judging. And that leads me to a question, Stuart. There's a lot of pushback from people, about the whole plaintiff's bar. But your whole career has been wrapped up in social justice issues, hasn't it? And, you know, in that regard, how did that play into your decision to get on board here?
That's an excellent question. Social justice is what being a plaintiff's lawyer is all about, because you have someone who was damaged by someone else. Maybe it was a motorist, maybe it was a doctor, maybe it was a corporation. And where do they turn, if not to the court system, to try to even the playing field and get back what they lost? It's hard for me to understand the criticism that people level about the plaintiff's bar, but usually that ends the moment they themselves are damaged and need a plaintiff's attorney. Then, wow, let me get this one or that one, and let's try to get ourselves back on our feet. So this case was different in the sense that you had simultaneously 98 people die, leaving hundreds of survivors, children, grandchildren, spouses in some cases, parents, and they all had this need. Where were they to go? And Hansman, as you said, Neil, marshaled the lawyers he thought appropriate to come before him and take a pledge. And that pledge was, you're going to help these folks, but you're going to do it pro bono, meaning for free. And we all agreed to do it under those circumstances. What happened was that the case was concluded in just less than 1 year, and we recovered in excess of $1 billion for these families. And so the judge, believing that it was fair to compensate for the very first time, said, all right, I'm going to give what he believed would be a reasonable fee to these 17 or 18 firms. And that's what he did. And I think it was a tremendous act of faith on the part of the lawyers. And I think that the families now, while they'll never recover from the devastating loss and the emotional loss that they sustained, at least have a means to go forward with their lives.
I think a lot of people don't realize how much risk a plaintiff's lawyer takes in any case, because you are basically fronting the expenses and it's your time, and you could end up with nothing. So you're basically working for people that whether they have money or not, it's really on your bankroll that the process is taking place. And that is a really a good thing for society, that irrespective of what your wealth is, you can participate in a trial that will hopefully provide true justice.
Yeah, well, like we like to say, you can get the best lawyer in a civil case on a contingency fee, much better than an average lawyer or a lesser lawyer for the same amount, the same percentage. That's not true in criminal defense. Generally speaking, the very best charge the very most. That's not true in business law. The same thing. The major law firms charge the very most. So here's a chance, we think, to give people like you and like me and like your listeners an opportunity to have the best quality representation for the same amount or percentage as they would pay to an average lawyer or less.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 and FM 96.9, and we'll be right back.
When a bank is owned by the community and invests in the community, it answers to a different call. It's personal. It's driven by your needs, not ours. Welcome to American Riviera Bank, based right here in Santa Barbara with branches in Montecito and Goleta. Our customers know us for personal service, every day, every way.
You can bank on us.
Bank on us.
Bank on us!
American Riviera Bank. Bank on better.
The Santa Barbara Education Foundation supports programs that enrich the academic, artistic, and personal development of all students in the Santa Barbara Unified School District. Here's Erin Shugart.
Well, we support Santa Barbara Unified School District by raising funds for literacy. We just want to do all we can to support the district in teaching kids to read. And then there's teacher grants for areas that they simply do not have the funding for, including books for the classroom. We raise funds for homeless students. About 1 in 7 kids in the district is considered homeless. We also oversee programs that fund music and the arts. And then we're always in need of general operating support, but we're super grateful to the generosity of community members for helping us.
To learn more about the Santa Barbara Education Foundation, go to sbefoundation.org. That's sbefoundation.org. Or call 805-284-9125.
This month in 1882, the world's first hydroelectric power plant began operating on the Fox River in Appleton, Wisconsin. Soon, hydroelectric power plants were spurring industrial growth in many parts of the country. Now, water-generated electricity accounts for about 7.3% of power nationwide. Natural gas plants produce around 40% of our electricity, followed by coal and nuclear power.
Profile America is a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And we can be reached at 805-564-1290, or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. And so, Stuart, before the break, we were talking about how there were about 18 plaintiff's attorneys representing the victims of the Surfside condo. So the judges handpicked those plaintiff's attorneys, and how did those 18 all work together in concert?
Well, a larger number than 18 came to court when the announcement was made that this case is going to be handled by the incomparable Judge Hansman. And they were all at the time getting individually retained by families and whatnot. But Hansman said, stop. I'll only take volunteers who are willing to do this pro bono. With that, about half of the lawyers said, hey, we've got bills to pay. We can't do that. Those of us that remained, he then hand selected from a much larger group.
Who did the defense? Who was the defense lawyer?
Excellent question again, Mr. Carson. He had every named defendant, of which there were about 20 at the end, had outstanding defense attorneys. Some of the firms were big law, like Greenberg Traurig, which is a national law firm, an international law firm. They were hand-selected by the insurers, as they always do, and they're what we call silk stocking lawyers. They don't make mistakes. They throw everything at you that they can in terms of a defense. They have the deepest pockets available to defend the cases and whatnot. But one by one, we succeeded in getting all of these defendants to pay all of their insurance coverage, which I thought was remarkable, and especially to do it within a one-year time frame is unheard of.
So how come it didn't settle? Why did it have to go to court?
Oh, it did settle. It did. It went to court to get the settlement approved.
Okay.
The court had to approve the settlement. And then Judge Colby volunteered to come in at the request of Judge Hansman. Now that we've got the settlement, we've got this pot of money. How do we divide it among these the victims, 98 families? And there were other issues they had to resolve involving. How about people that lost their real estate, as everyone did, the value of their condominiums, their possessions? Hansman ferreted through that. And then he and Judge Colby came in and heard family after family after family, as I say, 90 plus times, plead their case through their lawyers and make awards.
Isn't part of the raison d'etre of plaintiff's law is to make changes for society that will make sure something bad won't happen again. And when you look at Miami, not much has happened since Surfside. You even had to evacuate the courthouse once. You know, what's with Miami?
Things have changed. The Florida legislature was bombarded with bills designed now to move up the inspection time, which generally speaking was 25 to 30 years, and cut it in half at least, have new condominium board responsibilities, have new reserve funds for capital outlays that are needed for the work to be done. Unfortunately, our legislature didn't allot the time it took to solve this problem, but it's now back on the agenda. It's front and center. And Miami, with its aging condominiums, and Florida, with its aging condominiums, is now on notice. You can't let these buildings be neglected. And if you're on a condominium board and you don't pay attention to the condition of the building, you can have serious legal responsibility.
And what responsibility, if any, did the governmental agencies that do the inspections have in this case?
Well, in this case, the government had none. And that's the way it it is. It wasn't that the building wasn't inspected, and it wasn't that the engineering firm didn't write a letter saying, do this now. The cost is $15 million based upon our estimate. Like if you would have an engineer come and inspect your home and write an estimate for the work. The problem then began with the condominium board not aggressively suing the owners to get that money raised. In fact, after months of dilly-dallying, they had raised about $5 million. And then in the middle of the night, the building collapses due to a lot of other people's responsibility besides the condominium board. But the government itself was not responsible for this one.
Now, do you think it will have an effect on you know, governmental regulation moving forward in these condos? Or do you think really the changes will be not only in the judicial system, thanks to the two of you, but also to maybe, you know, the legislature changing how condo association boards need to handle these things?
Well, I think the legislature has to respond now, or they'll be totally embarrassed. And the Florida legislature has a high capacity for embarrassment, believe me.
We've been reading the newspaper.
But I do think that they'll have to respond now. In terms of the judiciary, this ain't coming around again. There'll never be anything like this again. Hopefully, first of all, from the human loss point of view and the financial loss point of view. But there really was no blueprint for having all of these cases brought together in such record time with this much compensation. This is a pure invention of Michael Hansman and finally Hansman and Colby in getting it done.
So if you look at, you know, the typical plaintiff's lawyer, they don't come anywhere near having the kinds of resources you have. You have 50 professionals working at your law firm, which provides you with a depth of knowledge and the ability to really get involved in the details of a case. Was that shared with the other lawyers that maybe didn't have the resources you had? Were you open with what you had with your co-attorneys?
That was one of the most satisfying and gratifying effects of the case, was that we all shared with one another what we learned. And to some extent, actually, there were people that were performing the same task twice. But better that than nobody performing the task properly. And so the answer, Neil, is yes. We all shared beautifully and got caught up in the Hansman spirit of resolving this matter.
So, you know, typically the playbook for lawyers representing insurance companies is, let's play this out as long as we can, because we're going to get interest income on the reserves, even if it takes all of the money anyway, but at least we'll get an extra 10 years. What motivated them? Was it the legal work? Was it the fact that there was so much publicity? Apparently, this was a record. 1 year for this type of case is probably a national record. How did you do that?
Well, I think it was the publicity. I think it was the legal work. But I think the overriding power behind making this case come together was this judge who looked out, saw sniffing dogs, police officers, fires, rain coming down on whatever hope there was for these families. And he was going to take this engineering and structural disaster and not let it go unresponded to in the legal system. In other words, he was not going to let this turn into a legal disaster. And so he made it perfectly clear to those lawyers defending the case, I've seen where this is going. You have just so much coverage. You've got 98 deaths. You've got all of this condominium loss. You've disrupted all of these lives. I want it done. And they beautifully got the message and stood up to the plate, because you're so right. Generally speaking, it profits insurance defense attorneys to slow things down because the carrier does make money on the money that it doesn't have to pay out. But in this case, because of his sheer force of will and the fact that he inspired, I think, both sets of lawyers, they got it done.
I think, you know, just from my perspective, if it's okay, is I've had a chance to observe many, many, many judges in the state court and the federal court. And I do believe, being such a good friend of Judge Hansman and knowing what was going on from the beginning of this case, is that he was a true quarterback in the courtroom. And he knew how the game was going to end and when it was going to end. And he stuck to every bit of that, every bit of his architecture in completing this successfully.
Sounds like a federal case as opposed to a local case, which is unfortunately the reality, that local cases sometimes with judges that aren't as in control as he was just go on and on. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 and FM 96.9, and we'll be right back.
This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit EnergySavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
This is the place that talks about Santa Barbara.
Mike in the Morning.
Community Matters, Radio, Real Estate.
The Sports Lounge with Big Lou.
Money Talk.
The Andy Caldwell Show.
Teen Sports Radio.
Community Alert. Mortgage Matters.
Welcome to the Voices.
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 Voices
of Santa Barbara.
The CEO Report.
When CSUCI presents About Education.
The Farm to Table Hour.
Around the World.
The Jeremiah Show.
The Art and Antiques Radio Show.
Garden Gossip.
Cork and Fork Radio Show.
Tell Me Your Story.
KZSB.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
As we just yesterday celebrated the anniversary of 9/11, how much, Judge Colby, how much of the playbook did you look at, or did you get guidance from the judicial bench that handled the 9/11 victims?
That's very interesting that you asked that, because Judge Hansman, prior to us starting, had a discussion with Mr. Feinberg, who was the person who decided how the claims should be handled in 9/11 and also many of the other natural disasters that have occurred. And the decision was to go a different route in the Surfside case than took place in the 9/11 collapse. It was our approach was a more personalized approach, as we spoke about at the beginning, personalized justice, as opposed to take the number of victims, take the pot of money, divide it into that number and distribute, with no chance for the victims to present their feelings and have some type of personalized closure in the courtroom setting. Because you have to imagine that they waited, many of them, for the bodies to be taken out of the collapsed structure. We didn't want the litigation process to be another waiting game for these traumatized families. And time was very important to Judge Hansman. So we gave each family approximately 2.5 hours to come in with their family members, with videos, with paraphernalia about the family's life and their lost loved ones. And we gave them full empathy. We were fully prepared. We knew everything about these families and their lost loved ones. And at the end of each trial, Judge Hansman and I came down off the bench and we hugged these families, these surviving family members, with the tightest embraces that you could imagine, that were truly from one heart to another. And there were some amazing stories. One of Stuart's clients, hope I could say
sure,
this.
Sure.
She was Orthodox Jewish and a lovely woman. And it was such a tragic case. She lost her daughter, 20 something years old. And when the case was over, she wrote me a beautiful email with a picture enclosed that she knew that my mom had just died a week and a half before the trial started. And she felt so bad for me in light of her suffering that she sent me a picture of her memorial candle that's lit in the Jewish religion. With the memorial candle for her daughter, next to it was a memorial candle for my mom, Carol. Where do you see this humanity in a courtroom? She didn't even know what her result was going to be, but she knew that she felt true love and kindness and compassion from the court.
That's really powerful. You know, I can't think of anybody that's been in a courtroom for, you know, being a plaintiff or a defendant that has felt that same level of humanity. And, you know, that's really commendable that it was a environment that you could create that had that empathy and that everybody in it had one common goal of getting to closure for these poor people who have endured this tragedy.
Stuart, you've been practicing for many years. I imagine there is an emotional component to this for many, many cases. That is, you in many ways are holding someone's not only future in your hands, but also their ability to come to closure. Have you had sleepless nights? Have you had, you know, forgetting about the law, have you had the emotional strain that goes along with, you know, really basically almost like a doctor working on people's ability to be happy?
I last slept well in 1972. That's very insightful. You have a fine line between needing, and when I say needing, the obligation to project the client's loss and yet not being so overcome by it that you can't articulate it to a judge or to a jury. And by the same token, the things that you have to say to the judge or to the jury have to be legitimate and heartfelt and projected from the plaintiff or the person who's suffering himself or herself. And so you could get up having spent the night before with the plaintiff who's been weeping and telling you these things and decompose very easily and not be able to articulate their loss. But I've at least been blessed to be able to stand back, whether it's inches or a foot, hear their story, then turn to the side and tell it to the judge and explain to him what it is that they're feeling. And then oftentimes invite the court to hear from them personally if they so desire. A jury can't do that, but this is the way it is. As I said, it was, it's very thoughtful that you asked that. I would suspect that doctors do go through similar situations, particularly when they lose a patient that they've had a tremendous investment in, that they've tried to do the right thing and the best thing for the patient, but they couldn't save them. You've got to go on to the next patient because that next patient needs you as well. And so we professionals get tasked for this. And I think, honestly, something I've never said before, I think that's what separates the men from the boys, probably in medicine and in law, and probably separates success from mediocrity in both those fields as well.
Do you have a hard time going into court and watching someone who works for you defend someone? I mean, it must be difficult. You know, you're a fantastic, great lawyer. And in order for your firm, which has so many people, you have to, at least unless you want to kill yourself, you have to let other people do trial work as well. It's almost like watching your son or daughter. Is that something you've done, or is it too nerve-wracking?
No, this is the conversation we had while we were waiting to come on, where Judge Colby expressed a desire to have heard from our first year lawyer. He said, I wish you'd let him present something. I said, in this case, we had six different lawyers from the firm at various levels of experience presented. But the point is, yes, you both have to mentor them and make sure that they fulfill their obligations to themselves, but you have to make as the primary goal the client. And so you select the person that you think can best articulate this. But look, the senior surgeon turns things over to the resident and the fellow and says, complete this, because it is a learning curve and you do have to educate, you do have to mentor and do these things. And by the way, at lunch, I told Jonathan, I think that mentoring now is the most satisfying thing that I do, apart from trying a case, actually. I mean, I love the fact that I've got some great young talent.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 and FM 96.9, and believe it or not, we'll be right back with our final segment.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
When a bank is owned by the community and invests in the community, it answers to a different call. It's personal. It's driven by your needs, not ours. Welcome to American Riviera Bank, based right here in Santa Barbara with branches in Montecito and Goleta. Our customers know us for personal service every day, every way.
You can bank on us.
Bank on us.
Bank on us!
American Riviera Bank. Bank on better.
Social Security is with you through life's journey from birth to retirement. As your life changes year to year, so do your needs. For over 80 years, Social Security has helped to meet your needs and is committed to improving access to the services that make a difference in your life. Today, you can verify your earnings, estimate your future benefits, apply for retirement, manage your benefits, and even change your address, all from the comfort of your home. Social Security's online services help put you in control with secure access to your information anytime, anywhere, allowing you to spend more time with family, friends, or simply just enjoying the day. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. See what you can do online at socialsecurity.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So, Stuart, with your vast experience as a plaintiff's attorney, do you think that the victims of the Surfside condo would have received a better settlement had it gone to a jury trial as opposed to a settlement hearing?
Well, it would have been a disaster for the following reasons. Number one, the cost of the litigation, if it had all of these individual lawyers representing individual clients, would have eaten up the insurance proceeds. It would have left the fund depleted, and the cost of preparing the case and trying the case would have been far more than what we, or an enormous portion of what we recovered in the end anyway, assuming that these lawyers would have even won over $1 billion. And frankly, some could make significant contributions and verdicts, and some might not. So it would have been a complete disaster had it been left to having 90 separate trials with 90 separate jurors and 90 separate appeals that could have lasted 4 or 5 years. This was the only way, which made it even more remarkable, as we discussed earlier in the show. Don't you think so?
Oh, I was just going to say how incredible this paradigm that we had in the courtroom was so different, because Judge Hansman and I were so careful in being consistent with our rationale as far as damages for similarly situated surviving families. Could you imagine if there were 98 different juries deciding what a family's lost loved one's life would be worth? I think the results would be all over the place.
So Judge Colby, you mentioned at the very beginning that it was unfortunate that the trial was not televised. Is there any plans, or are there any plans to write this up as a case, like a Harvard Law School case, or a way of using it as a teaching moment for aspiring attorneys and judges?
I would think that there would be, just because it was so unique and well received in the legal community and in the general community. And me looking as an outsider, being invited to participate in the way I was by Judge Hansman, it was not only fascinating, but it was the truest justice that I've ever seen in my career.
Thank you so much, Stuart Grossman, premier plaintiff's lawyer in the country, for being with us today. John Colby, a judge extraordinaire, and Judge Michael Hansman, that will probably go down as one of the great jurists of our time. And I think there's got to be some way, I don't know how to do it, but to get him on the Supreme Court, which would, I think, improve. Of course, I think if I went on the Supreme Court, it would improve things. But certainly, Judge Hansman, it would be great. Anyway, thank you guys so much. And thank you all for listening. You've been listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you all next week.
You too.